several months, he said. Perhaps inevitably this peace of mind was short-lived. Katzenberg did his best to deter his friends and allies from commenting to the press, including especially David Geffen, who did remain uncharacteristically silent. Katzenberg was hoping to maintain the aura of goodwill of their last meeting, finish out his tenure with dignity, and, most important, do nothing to jeopardize the lump sum payment due him when he left the company. As long as that payment was unresolved, Eisner retained enormous leverage over Katzenberg. Even so, Katzenberg's departure from Disney was a seismic event, not just in Hollywood. Given his prominence and the success of the animated films he produced at Disney, his leaving was front-page news in the major papers. Newsweek made the split its cover story. In the Los Angeles Times, Spielberg compared Eisner to Machiavelli, which made Eisner furious. Eisner angrily accused Katzenberg of fomenting harmful publicity. The tone of that phone call worried Katzenberg. He called a lawyer, Bert Fields, and filled him in on the termination bonus in his contract and the background. Fields suggested that Katzenberg give Disney a deadline to make the payment, which he did, September 9th, which was 2 weeks away. In the meantime, Katzenberg learned that he wasn't welcome at the Lion King premiere in London. Elton John canceled his party. A Disney lawyer asked Katzenberg how quickly he could vacate his office. Like Larry Gordon years before, he insisted he was staying put until the day his contract ended, on October 1st. Peter Schneider told the animators that they couldn't throw a going-away party for Katzenberg at the studio. Senior live-action executives, also barred from holding an event on Disney property, chipped in $5,000 each to rent a hangar at the Santa Monica Airport and throw a decent party. Everyone came, even people who had worked for Katzenberg but had since left Disney. Still, it was a restrained and sad affair. Katzenberg took his wife and twin sons to Disney World over the Labor Day weekend, as he had every year since coming to Disney. There, the Orlando-based animators managed to give him a party with kegs of his beloved Diet Coke. Katzenberg's September 9th deadline passed with no word from Disney. The next day, a Saturday, Eisner came to Katzenberg's house. The pretense of goodwill, of staying friends, had vanished. The conversation quickly deteriorated into mutual accusations. Eisner again blamed Katzenberg for the press coverage, and this time Katzenberg was combative. "You know how to stop it," Katzenberg countered. "You have not fulfilled one single promise that you made to me in terms of how you were going to deal with this. You've done an assassination job on me. I've yet to be paid a nickel. Deal honestly with me." Eisner argued that because of ambiguities in the contract, he was going to have to get board approval for any payment, and said, "I can't go to the board right now. They're too angry with you." This infuriated Katzenberg, since he believed it was Eisner who had turned the board against him. And whether the board was angry or not, it still had to honor his contract. That Friday, Katzenberg went into Eisner's office and slammed the 1988 deal memo written by Frank Wells on his desk. He'd highlighted with a yellow marker the passage outlining his bonus. "My 11-year-old would read this and understand what it means," he said. Eisner seemed flustered and said only that he was handing the matter over to Litvak.